Well, the night sky in September. But of course, the sun is setting rather earlier. You don't have to stay up quite so late to see the heavens. And not long after nightfall, you can see that lovely area of stars with Cygnus, Lyra, and Aquila high in the southwest. The three brightest stars, Deneb, Vega, and Altair, form what's called the summer triangle. I've talked about that part of the sky at length in previous of these little programs. If you want to learn more about that area, go back and perhaps pick up last month's night sky section of the podcast. But if you move sort of round to the east, fairly high in the south, perhaps a little bit to the southeast, we have the winged horse Pegasus, upside down as it happens. And up to the left of that, we have first Andromeda, and then Cassiopeia. Now, in that part of the sky lies one of the jewels, really, of the Northern Hemisphere, and that's the Andromeda Galaxy, M31. And on the night sky page of the Jodrell Bank website, just put night sky into Google, I've actually put a chart to show you two ways of easily finding your way to Andromeda. One way is to start with the square of Pegasus and take the upper left-hand star, which actually is called Alpha Andromedae. If you move round two stars, slightly curving upwards from there, and then turn sharp right, you'll come to another little fairly bright star. If you move the same distance again, you should see, certainly with binoculars, the Andromeda Galaxy, sort of a faint, fuzzy oval. And if you can get yourself to a really dark sky site and there's no moon, you should see it with your unaided eye. Sometimes Pegasus is a bit below the horizon, and if so, there's another way of finding Andromeda, and that's to use the constellation Cassiopeia. The three stars to the upper right form obviously a bit of a V, or an arrow really, and if you follow that arrow downwards, you'll come to Andromeda Galaxy as well. So, two nice ways, easy ways to find the galaxy, the nearest large galaxy to us. And a nice thing to think about when you actually look at this is that the photons that are falling on your retina left there over 2.5 million years ago. You're literally looking back into time. So what about the planets? Well, Jupiter is still really the highlight of the planetary scene this month, and it's seen in the south as nightfall begins. As the Earth goes round the Sun, we might say on the inside track, in fact, over the last month or so, Jupiter has been seen to move westwards relative to the stars. That's called retrograde motion. But on September the 7th, it begins to move eastwards again and is above, a bit to the left, of the handle of the teapot in Sagittarius. Sadly, in northern England, this is very low in the sky, so we don't see either Sagittarius or Jupiter all that well. If you're looking at it with a telescope, you may notice that the top and the bottom are tinted slightly bluish and slightly red. This is refraction in the atmosphere. Which way round it looks depends upon whether your telescope inverts or not. One way to get a somewhat clearer image of Jupiter is to observe it through, let's say, a green filter, and then the image is certainly clearer. If you've got a fairly big telescope, perhaps 8 inches or more, you could actually try and use a very narrow band filter. There's an O3 filter, which is a very narrow range of wavelengths in the green. And that, of course, eliminates refraction completely. And I tried this the other night, and I was actually quite surprised at the detail I could see on Jupiter. So although it's low in the sky, it's still worth having a look, perhaps not getting more than about 15 or 16 degrees above the southern horizon. Well, Saturn is in conjunction with the Sun on September the 4th, on the far side of the Sun, so obviously there's no hope of seeing it in the early part of the month. However, towards the end of September, it will reappear in the pre-dawn sky, and in fact, by the very end of the month, will rise about 2 hours before the Sun, with a magnitude of plus 0.9. Now that's significantly less than it often appears to be, because when you look at it that first time, once it reappears, you'll see that the rings at an angle of just 4 degrees to edge on. And so obviously there's a lot less light reflected from Saturn and its rings. As we go towards the end of the year, that angle will decrease and there will come a point when they disappear completely. I'll let you know more about that as the time comes. Now, Mercury was behind the Sun beginning of last month, but it's gradually moving to what's called eastern elongation. It gets there on the 11th of September, and that's when its angular separation to the eastern side, to the left of the Sun, is at its greatest. The problem at this time of year is that the ecliptic, which is the path of the Sun across the sky, and it's basically along that line, roughly, that the planets are seen, it has a very shallow angle with the horizon. So although it's some way away from the Sun, its elevation above the ground is very low, making it quite hard to see. And I'll come to back to that shortly in the highlights. Mars, likewise, is also very low above the horizon, not far from Venus. And again, I'll come back to that shortly. It's only got magnitude 1.7 now, and the angular size is just under 4 arc seconds. So it just looks like a little, tiny little, perhaps a disc, if the seeing is good. And again, Venus can be seen very low in the west after sunset. It's got a magnitude of minus 3.8, so you can pick it out fairly well, even without binoculars, but you have to have a good low western horizon, because its elevation isn't really very great. So I'm going to come to those three now in what we might call the highlights of the month. Well, I've pre-flashed a couple of these. Between the 3rd and the 19th of September, we do have a trio of planets really quite close. In fact, within 5 degrees, that's the definition of a trio. And these are Venus, which obviously is the brightest, just to the lower right of Venus, and it actually can get immediately south, that's called a conjunction, we have Mars. And below, about 3.5 degrees away, we have Mercury. So they stick pretty close together for quite some time. On the 11th and the 12th of September, we do get, in fact, conjunctions of the two, when you have two of the planets basically with the same right ascension. So they're sort of one above the other if they were due south. Quite a fun thing perhaps to try and do would be to spot them in the daytime if it's clear. Now, they're about 25 degrees away from the Sun. So if you are looking, make sure you don't look anywhere near the Sun. That shouldn't be too difficult. What you need to do is to use a compass and find where due south is. You have to take the magnetic variation into account. So find where due south is. If on the 11th or the 12th, you look due south at about 2:30 British summer time, and take some binoculars and lift them up about 30 degrees from the horizon. That's obviously a third of the way from the horizon to the zenith. There's a very good chance you'll pick out Venus. And once you've got Venus in your binoculars, if you keep that to the upper part of the field of view, you should see Mars a little bit down to its lower right, only about 13 arc minutes away. And then about 3 degrees south, you'll also see Mercury. So I've never actually looked at Venus in the middle of the day. That could well be worth a try around the 11th and the 12th of September. Now, just after that, on the 13th, there's another interesting event, a lunar occultation of the planet Neptune. And if you have never actually looked for Neptune, it's a way, perhaps, of finding out where it is quite easily. But I'm afraid you've actually got to wait up after midnight. It's about 2 o'clock onwards on the 13th of September, and it passes essentially behind the Moon. Obviously, it's not Neptune moving, it's the Moon moving across the sky, which occults Neptune. And basically, at somewhere around 24 minutes past 3 British summer time, it depends a little bit where you actually live in the UK, you'll see an occultation. As Neptune has a disk which is 2.3 arc seconds across at the moment, it actually doesn't disappear instantly. When stars go behind the Moon, it just goes just like that. It's gone instantly. But of course, because Neptune has a disk and has size, its image will disappear a little bit more slowly. It might take a few seconds. Well, a final one to try. The 27th of September. Now, I mentioned the fact that Saturn is going to be in the pre-dawn sky at the end of the month. Well, just after 5:30 British Summer Time, which is about half an hour before dawn, you will have a chance to see Saturn just a few degrees away from a very thin crescent moon. In fact, 51 hours before new moon, and only 4% is illuminated, so a very thin crescent. And so you see that, look a little bit to the left, you'll have a chance to see Saturn, perhaps the first time you'll see it once it's come round behind the sun. Slightly interestingly, I was in China to see the eclipse last month, and I looked out of my hotel window at about 5 in the morning, and I could actually see a thin crescent moon above the buildings across the road, and photographed it both with my camera and also with a small telescope. That was just 36 hours before the total eclipse of the sun, which by definition is at new moon. And that's certainly the closest to new moon I've ever actually photographed it. And I put those pictures along with a little report on the night sky page. So I think there's a fair bit to look out for during September, and I wish you all the best.